Welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. I'm Ailey Packham and we are all cursing the Pope in association with oldfootballshirts.com. Yes, that's right, a mastercast from Newcastle goalkeeper Nick Pope kept us at bay and sorted that the Geordies return home with a point after our 0-0 draw on Saturday. Lots to be positive about though, including an introduction to the Amex for Karim Mitoma, whose cameo appearance delighted the home faithful and left us hungry for more. Also this week, the Albion faithful got more excited about a second round cup draw than perhaps our recent trip to Old Trafford and forthcoming ones to Anfield and to West Ham. The name Forest Green Rovers came out of the velvet bag and everyone was Google mapping to find out just exactly how to get to Nailsworth on a Wednesday night. But before we tick that ground off, we have got the small matter of a trip to the London Stadium on Sunday, where West Ham will look to break their Albion curse. Also this week, lots of speculation about Neil Maupay, and has he kicked his final ball for the Albion? But another player that we did say ta-ta for now to is Kel Sherpen, who has gone to Vitesse Arnhem for the season, and I'm sure that our friends in the Dutch Seagulls will keep us up to date with his progress. Joining me today is, as ever, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back a man who has many strings to his bow, but putting out media fires is now one of them. Please welcome back Albion's head of media and communication, Paul Camlin. Welcome back, Paul. Lovely to see you.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me on again.
Here we are. We record this on Zoom. So your intro wasn't quite 100% correct, was it, AD? Paul's hiding. He might have a new haircut or something, or maybe he's hair pink. Anyway, welcome back to the Raw, Paul. How's the summer been for you? But there's no rest for the wicked, is there?
Actually, we did manage to get a decent summer break. It felt like the first one in a while since the COVID pandemic hit. Those last two summers seemed to be very short, very, very quick. And although we even had the early start this year and obviously the Women's Euros at the Amex, which was brilliant, did manage to get a decent break, which was nice. Got back in time for the quarterfinal against Spain. Which was nice, and then obviously pre-season we've been full on, been busy but not too busy, and great start to the season.
Most of the summer transfer stuff was pretty much done in January, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, and I think Graham's hit the nail on the head, hasn't he, in the last couple of weeks or so, when he said obviously Cucurella's moved on to Chelsea. I think we expected Bissouma to move on. We go about our business in this sort of calm, measured fashion. And I think Tony Bloom spoke at the start of the pre-season as well. People have probably seen the documentary that's gone out now on Prime and BT and Sky. But I think during that interview, and we did some stuff for the club channels and local media at the same time, I think Tony sort of said he felt we had the strongest squad. Obviously, that was before Correa moved on to Chelsea. But I still think that rings true. You know, Matoma's come in, and Dav's come in, or come back from loans. We've also recruited Julio as well. I think we're very close on another one, which has been bubbling under, and probably by the time this goes out, that'll be done. So I think the squad's in a good place.
Okay. Absolutely.
But there's lots of things that you mentioned there, Paul, which we're going to touch on. But I mean, one of them you mentioned about obviously was about how well the club's run, and we see that, and it's amazing. But the win over Man United last week has actually got more and more people actually looking at the way that the club's run it, and how, and particularly in the way that club's run at the moment, and seeing the right and the wrong ways of doing it.
Yeah, but that's testament to Tony. It's taken, and to Paul Barber as well. Over the last 10 years, it's taken that long to kind of get this moving. If you think back to 2014, when we opened the training ground, which is where I'm sat now, we've extended it as well in recent years. I think Tony stood up and did a sort of opening day speech, and said, it's going to take 5 years for this place to start really bearing fruit. And we're seeing that, you know, Ben White, you know, he's obviously come through, he's played a season in the Premier League, been sold for 50 million. It helps us attract players, helps us develop our players. So, you know, there's a solid plan behind it, you know, and that's something that will continue. You know, I know obviously the club would, disappointed when Dan Ashworth went to Newcastle, and he did a lot of good work in his time here. I think he'd probably done 80-90% of that work that he was brought to do. He'd done a lot of that work in terms of setting up systems, process, strategies, and obviously it's been fairly seamless with David Weir stepping into that role. And David's got his own qualities as well, so I think it's, you know, that transition's almost internally it's felt seamless, and obviously Dan left just after the window closed, the winter transfer window at the start of this year. And then obviously we finished really strongly with David in that role as technical director. I think we've had a good summer as well. So, you know, it feels like, you know, the structure that's in place, it's not about just one person. And I think sometimes the media narrative gets that wrong. You know, don't get me wrong, Dan was terrific and he's a great operator, and Newcastle have got one of the best in the business. But I think we've also now got one of the best in the business. You know, it's similar to what we've done in the midfield position. You know, Bissouma's gone, sold him for a lot of money. Moises Caicedo's come in and people are watching him and he's just as good. So, I think there's an analogy there in terms of on and off the pitch.
I think people of a given vintage, and I suppose probably a fairly recent vintage, might sort of struggle to marry up a little bit when seeing once upon a time Gordon Greer bawling lumps out of friend and foe, and now within an administrative role as a loans manager. How's he settling in?
Yeah, he's actually in the building today. Funnily enough, he's down once a fortnight. I think he's very good at that role. He was really keen to sort of progress internally with the club because he was doing some scouting based up in the Northwest, where he'll continue to be based, because it's not about being here in the building, it's about being out watching those players. So obviously, okay, Family are based up in the Northwest. It's easy for him to get round, see games all over the country, or where necessary, jump on a flight from a you know, he's close to an airport. So yeah, Gordon knows what he's doing for sure. He's a really super intelligent guy, and obviously played the game at various levels, right through to obviously winning international caps with Scotland. So, you know, he knows his way about the game. He's got a really good rapport and relationship with David Weir. Two Scotsmen together. So yeah. It'll be interesting when England plays Scotland.
But I was going to say, yeah, Paul, when you started,
both impressive guys.
Yeah, I was going to say, Paul, when you started at the club, probably the only different language you had to try and comprehend was Scottish, actually. But it's there's a few more at the club now. But
I mean, Charlie Oatway.
But I mean, you mentioned there about Gordon, but I mean, there's a lot of the guys from that particular vintage still working with the club. Gary Dicker's come back. Is Steve Sidwell still around?
No, so Steve's mainly doing the punditry now with BT, does a lot of the games. Did again, spoke to him the other day. I think he was due to do one of our games, but I can't remember whether it was the West Ham. I think it may be the West Ham game coming up this weekend. Mm-hmm. But Sidney's sort of taken off in the same way as Glenn with the media career. You know, he's very good at that side of it. You know, really good pundits. They you know what they're doing, and both have been really successful with that, as is Bobby Zamora now as well. Starting to see a bit more of him doing the punditry. So, yeah, you know, those guys have worked really hard at that, and it's not, you know, there's a lot of hard work goes into that, and I know how hard both of them have worked. Glenn, well, all three of them have worked in terms of getting there, doing the research, all the travel. You know, it's pretty exhausting. We know as fans, don't we? You know, all the travelling, and you know, they've put the miles in. So, yeah, they're doing well, and it's good to see them doing well.
But leaping right on AD's point there, I think is what you're saying is that, you know, we've got people who went away and came back. Like you say, you've got Gordon in that sort of administrative role. You've got Gary Dicker, you've got Andrew Crofts ahead of him. Guy Butters is still at Albion in the community. I mean, there is something still about
Ben Roberts, yeah, Bruno. The one thing I would say, though, it's not an old boys network. It's not let's give them a job. These guys work really hard to get their coaching badges. They know, you know, I look at Ben Roberts, he's an outstanding goalkeeping coach. You look at Bruno, he's an outstanding coach, as is Crofty, as is Gary Dicker. Guy Butters, you know, the amount of work and effort that he puts into the role that he does with Albion in the community, you know, in terms of that role and getting out there in the community and helping people. And, you know, they're all very, very, very good servants to the club. It's not about what they did on the pitch. You know, they've sort of carved these careers out and worked really hard to get where they are, and they deserve it and played a big part in our success. You know, you look at obviously how well Rob Sanchez has done, and Ben Roberts deserves a huge amount of success for that. You know, ask Graham what does Bruno bring to the table, and along with all the backroom staff, you know, an important part of that team, that structure. And obviously for those guys coming in from Swansea, or, you know, they'd had a year here from Swansea and before that Sweden, you know, you've got someone there who knows the club and knows the community and knows the fan base, or two people, I should say, Ben and Bruno, because they're sharing that office. So, you know, to have those, you know, luminaries, if you want to call them that, and guiding lights can help when someone comes into a football club that you could trust from day one. That's really important. There's a bit of continuity there as well. And obviously Crofty and Gary Dicker on the 2021s, I should say, now it's obviously and the 18s, they're, again, you know, they know the club, we know them, so it's good to know people and know their qualities, and when that role pops up and they've got the qualifications to do that role, you know, Tony and Paul Barber and David Weir won't sort of hesitate. Even Martin Hinchwood is now back at the club doing some scouting on the academy side, which is great. Yeah, bumped into him today. Fantastic to see Martin back. I did rib him a little bit and say, if you come back to be sacked for a third time, but that was all in jest, of course. But,
he did
remind me he got unsacked once, didn't he, by Steve Coppell. So I think after he'd gone as manager, Steve Coppell was very keen to keep him on, and that says it all, really, with someone like Hinch. You know, they're
absolutely
good people.
Yeah,
they know the football club, and just because they don't have an immediate impact and an immediate successful period of one role, you still don't want to throw all that knowledge and what have you out at the same time. So great to have someone like that back that knows the area. I know he was at Portsmouth most recently, and before that Stoke, and obviously operating in this area. And it's great that he's now back and operating for us and working for us.
Well, that is a bit of news I didn't realise. So, yeah, welcome back, Martin Hinch.
Well, there you go. It's an Albion Raw exclusive. Yeah. if Brian Owen doesn't jump on it between now and this game.
Yeah. I'll send him a text now.
Put him under
in. No, don't. I won't tell him. I'll keep quiet if you do.
Paul, you mentioned Bruno there. And now, I mean, Bruno is he was an influential player, he's influential on the pitch, and he said he's an influential coach, but also as a bridge to a lot of the foreign, like the Spanish players that are coming in and helping them settle into the area and everything else. He's been massively influential, hasn't he?
Absolutely. But what I would say is the group they're in here, it is fantastic. The group are brilliant. Going away with them on pre-season, we had some media out there, that sort of thing. You've got an unbelievable group there. And even within that group, you've got the sort of Spanish lads. Jeremy, for example, is very strong in his English. He's obviously grown up here, but he's English and Spanish. And he's been fantastic at first taking Moises under his wing, then Julio, you know, and sort of you've got Alexis here already. We had Mark here as well. So just those guys have been really good. And they're all, you know, very, very sort of keen to learn the English, but they've got that. Steven Alzati is another one, of course. He speaks good Spanish. But having those guys there to bring, you know, when those players arrive at the club, and as I said, it's probably going to be one arriving, another one arriving quite soon. That's really beneficial. You know, Denis Undav comes in. He's got Pascal here.
Yes.
And what? By the way, fantastic that Pascal's here for another 2 years. I think our best Premier League signing. What value for money? I love watching Pascal. Delighted he's staying.
He's one of those players you know the gross turn is coming. You can see it coming a mile off, and still defenders fall for it.
Just a class act, and I think he's actually currently in the best form we've ever seen him. He's got better.
But then
better,
I think a lot of them are. I think a lot of them are. It's. I think probably with what comes across from us as fans is, and I don't know how much you get to see in the train or anything like that, Paul. But what comes across to us. And I think, again, we saw it certainly in the second half against Newcastle, we saw it against Man United, is that it's not just the way that Graham Potter can get them to play and what have you. It's the time that they've now been together, which is, you know, pretty much half the season. They know each other. There's an awful lot more automation of...
Absolutely correct. 100%. And I think Graham's touched on that as well. You know, we're a team that's been together for a period of time. And yes, we've added and lost and added and lost, but the core of that team's there. And I think you're right. The other thing that I thought was so impressive during pre-season, and I'm talking more perhaps in training but also in the games that we played, and it was hard to judge in the games because you don't really know where other clubs are at in terms of their fitness levels, in terms of their preparations, but we looked so at it from the off, you know, in training, in games. So you don't want to get overconfident or even confident, because you think the amount of times I've seen us absolutely on fire in pre-season, then we get beat in the first game of the season.
We'll be in
that. But we looked absolutely, you know, but we looked so at it and so on our game. And I can remember going, you know, we obviously travel up as a media team with the team, and we went just for a quiet drink on the night before the game around the back of the hotel we were staying in, and we were sort of quietly confident, but you were like, but I just don't know. And then obviously the intensity the boys played with in the heat at Old Trafford, and more so against Newcastle, I mean, I just thought that was so impressive on Saturday against Newcastle, that sheer intensity that they just kept that momentum going all through the game. And by the way, Newcastle are going to be up there. They're not, you know, Eddie Howe's got them going, as Graham alluded to it in his press last week. They are going to be up there. They're going to be in and amongst the top 10 for sure. They've got quality players throughout. They've got momentum, obviously, with the takeover. Whatever you think about it, the fans have bought into it, and the atmosphere is great up there. They got off to a flyer. They beat Forest. You know, so they're going to be up there. And I thought they played really well defensively, although perhaps they didn't offer a huge amount going forward. I thought defensively the back four and the goalkeeper are outstanding. But you've got to love Dan Burn. And listen, if any one of us was playing professional football, lucky enough to be doing that, and we had a chance to play for the Albion, you understand his position. So I don't think anybody at the football club begrudges did that.
Oh God, no! Happy to give him. Happy to applaud
he's
him.
He's a top bloke, absolutely, and that was great seeing that at the final whistle. Yeah. And I think Saturday night he went out with the boys, stayed down. They had a bit of a meal together with the partners, which, you know, that shows you the level in which the dressing room and the club thinks of Dan Burn.
Okay, Paul. Well, let's talk a bit about Newcastle then, and we were hoping for fireworks to start the season off, and well, we got them.
What's the thinking behind that then, mate?
I think we just wanted to refresh it and just give everybody a bit more of an atmosphere at the game. We actually tried something different, where we played a bit more music at the last two games at the end of last season, Man U and West Ham, just to, you know, try and replicate a little bit of perhaps what was done at the Euros and some other clubs are doing. Okay, they're a bit cheesy, the songs, but people, you know, it gets the crowd going. So we just kept that in place with a bit of fireworks. And again, I thought the atmosphere was really good on Saturday. You know, don't underestimate the difference that it makes. And it was a horribly hot day. You know, we like a bit of sun, don't get me wrong, but it was, for some of the guys in the East Stand, I think it was particularly fierce. But, the atmosphere was really good in the ground. And I think it's been good at the last three games. I still think you can build on that and make it better.
Please, obviously please,
the Newcastle fans.
Please, no goal music.
So I don't think we do goal music, but the one thing that was really interesting at the Euros, we've always been absolutely no drum, anti-drum, but it was really good at the Euros. It worked and it got the atmosphere going. So that's one for the fans to think on. It's not something we're against, but what, you know, anything, and this is, we've recently done the fan advisory board, and I think we'll throw this one out to them. Anything we can do to improve the atmosphere? I think it came up at the forum about the positioning of the away fans. You know, these little things could be the difference between us, you know, kicking on and a seventh or a sixth place finish and, you know, where we finished last season. It can make the difference. So, you know, the marginal gains, the chairman's really, really hot on that sort of stuff. So, but at the same time, it's up to the fans, you know, the fans need to decide. So if we really think a drum will help and can sort of instigate the singing rather than killing it, then yeah, let's go for it. But we want to do more with the atmosphere. We know we can do it. There's been games where we've, you know, the atmosphere's been terrific, and certainly that Man United game. You know, I think it was funny. We were all talking the week before that about plans for this season. You know, the PA system needs an upgrade, for example.
Oh,
that
yes.
will help. Absolutely. So that's something that's potentially something we'll look at and on the agenda. But, you know, we were talking about it the week before. And, you know, how do we make the general atmosphere so much better? And then, of course, the team showed us exactly how you make the atmosphere better. You go beat Man United 4-0. So,
that's the best way to do it.
I mean, we're talking about the fireworks there. Yeah. You know, I mean, we had them off the pitch to start, but those two games at home. Well, that run of six games towards the end of the season, starting with the away games at Arsenal and Spurs, you know, that end to the season was the football the team was playing is probably the best I've ever seen us play.
Well, Andy, I was just gonna say to you, this is where you and I disagreed. You wanted the season to carry on. I mean, obviously you couldn't because we got to the 38th game. You wanted the season to carry on. I was happy to say, great, I'm glad we got here because we can finish the season on a high with a buzz and go into next year with the confidence as high as it's certainly ever been in the Premier League and probably ever been at the Amex. What was the feeling about that then, Paul?
Delighted with the finish, delighted for Graham. If you think what he's done in terms of evolving the squad, the players he's sold and then still finishes ninth in the league... you know, I thought it was a great bit of managerial skills, you know,
Absolutely,
head coach skills, whatever you want to call it. And obviously carried that through to the start of this season. Mm-hmm. So I think we are watching the greatest manager we've ever had.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, we're old enough to remember Alan Mullery's, the Chris Hughton's, obviously more recently. You know, and those are up there. Those guys are up there, along with, you know, the Mickey Adams for the back-to-back championships. I know Peter Taylor won the second one, but it was Mickey's team that achieved that. You know, we've had some great managers, Steve Coppell even, fantastic managers over the years. But I think we are witnessing our finest.
Listen, I've been watching since 1978 and I've not seen anything like this before. You know, this is...
And by the way, the reason he is the finest manager, in my opinion, is the football you're watching and you're being treated to every week.
Yeah.
You know, even Saturday, 0-0, and yet what we witnessed. I mean, look at... I actually met Chris Hughton at the start of the year. We had a spot of lunch and a catch-up just before he took the Garner job. And Chris paid Graham the greatest compliment, which was... He said, I can't believe what he's getting out of those players. Some of those players that I know and I worked with and coached, he's getting them to levels that I didn't think they were capable of getting to. And I think that's a huge, huge compliment from Chris. Absolutely. Real mutual respect between both Graham and Chris. I don't think they've ever spoken or met, but they've got a tremendous amount of respect for one another. And, you know, I've passed a couple of messages between. But... you know, it's a real pleasure watching what's happened here and how the team has evolved and, you know, the style of play, the quality, the bravery that Graham encourages, the way that he's done it. And let's not forget a couple of the senior players. You know, you've got Dunkey in there, you've got Adam Lallana in there, you've got Danny Welbeck in there, Pascal Gross. You know, those guys are setting the tone on the training pitch and in the games as well. As I think Graham said after the Man United game.
I mean, you've got a look at like the likes of Solly March as well, which is probably one of the players that Chris Hughton was probably alluding to, and he was brilliant on Saturday, and it was. But he wasn't the only one that's brilliant.
And again, for me, Solly's in the form of his career under Graham. I thought he was sensational on Saturday. I Moyes was excellent. We kind of almost got used to Moyes being excellent over the last 8-9 games. But Solly, for me, I thought was man of the match. Just outstanding. And then even Carew, when he came on. You know, he's up against an England fullback and just went past him like he wasn't there. We'd seen that in pre-season. And again, I was thinking, it's pre-season. Is he going to... And then, bang, 10 minutes in the Premier League and he's doing that. So he's going to be really exciting. And I think, again, Graham spoke about it, I think, after the Espanyol friendly. What he could bring and how he will excite the crowd, and I think he's going to become a real cult hero here for sure.
I hadn't seen Mitoma live, but I had seen snippets of him playing for USG, and he came on as a kind of an impact player for them as well. I mean, he started a few games, but he was tucking them away, and it just occurred to me: here we are, 5-0 up against Espanyol. And then Graham Potter does something just about as cruel as you could ever do, which is put Mitoma on. I can see him. I mean, when we were talking to people who hadn't seen him play, I said, I feel he's a kind of an upgrade on Kasenga Lualuwal in as much as he's there to close out a game if you need to. He's there to put pressure if, you know, he's there to cause havoc, but he can do so in a way that even in with those, you know, sort of sublime bits of skill that we saw in those in his cameo on Saturday. You know, the excitement that there is. I just hope, and this actually brings me on to, you know, the hype that there is surrounding, and it's not hype as such, but the way that so many people who are fans of big clubs are now talking about someone who's played 9 Premier League games in his career. And it's almost as if his career is taking off before it's even started to run, let alone begin to walk. I mean, Moises Caicedo, he's the next big thing, surely.
You could say that about 4 or 5 of the squad. That's how good the recruitment's been and the development of those players has been. So, yeah, I mean, obviously there's a lot of hype about Moises at the moment, and he's the one that's getting it. But you, as I said, there's plenty of those sort of players within the squad. And I think also you start looking down through the academy teams, there's a lot of players be really excited about coming through. And I don't want to name names. I don't think that's fair on those younger players. 4 or 5 players I'm looking at, and, you know, I'm really looking forward to seeing them play for the club and really excited about watching their careers develop. You know, it's brilliant, you know, fantastic time to be a fan. There's this sort of steady flow of talent coming through, and the one thing you know here that they will get an opportunity under Graham. It's age isn't a barrier at either end. If you're good enough and you're capable, you'll get that.
It's that pathway that he's created, which is one of the reasons he got that contract extension after
about 12 minutes
time as well. But yeah. I mean you were saying about
which let's just take a moment on that. If you remember at the time the reaction to that, even from some Brighton fans.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, I remember it. You think, wow, I mean, Tony's stick. I mean, it was a bright...
See, sometimes, you know, we were laughing about this yesterday. There was 4 of us sat around a table that I think between us have got almost 100 years of experience of working in football. Sometimes those people know what they're doing, if you know what I mean. And certainly in that instance, the chairman knew exactly what he was doing.
Okay, but you were talking about Moises there, and we've been so excited to watch his progress. And, you know, I mean, if only he got an opportunity early, but that's another story. But and obviously there is a lot of noise about him, there is a lot of interest. But I did particularly like Nick Trepanic's tweet about this one earlier. I think it was it today? I think it was today. When he said that West Ham are interested in signing Moises Caicedo. And he said, in the same way that Brighton are interested in signing Declan Rice. But you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. As usual, we're delighted to be brought to you in association with the brilliant oldfootballshirts.com. And Phil has given us a rather natty number today. I quite like this one. But can Paul Canlin tell me what it is?
I got a feeling it's South American or Spanish. Yeah,
that is definitely a feeling.
Well, I'll quickly describe it. It's there's a kind of a frontage of red and white hoops, horizontal hoops. There's what in the sponsor's place it says Lone Star, and below that is a Lone Star. The badge itself seems to be red and white stripes, not unlike Athletic Bilbao.
Atletico Madrid.
Or that, yeah.
Oh, well,
it's a bit, looks a bit Sunderlandy as well, that badge. Like,
yeah, and it's got kind of the frimmer down the side and actually on the shoulders. But everything about it, when it says Lone Star, everything about it, because the Lone Star state is Texas, so I'm just wondering if it is a Texan club. If it is, I haven't got a clue which one.
It is. You are in the wrong part of the world there, both of you.
It's got the initials LFA on the shirt. On the badge, sorry.
Right. So,
and it's got one star, which would suggest that they've won either their domestic league or a European league at the top.
So,
of
is this a Liberian club? Lithuanian?
I'm going to stop you there, Al. I mean, I think you're as close as you're going to get. It is not a Liberian club, no.
Is it the Liberian national team?
It is the Liberian national team. And here is what Phil has to say about this particular shirt. He says, here's your shirt of the week.
How have they got a sponsor on a national team shirt?
Well Ireland have, haven't they? They had Opal for a long time.
Yeah, maybe it's not a sponsor. But but anyway, here is your shirt of the week. It's a 2009 home shirt of the international team of the African country, Liberia. They are members of the Confederation of African Football, CAF, and they also play in the subgroup, the West African Football Union. The home ground is a 22,000 capacity Samuel Canyon Doe Sports Stadium in Painesville, a suburb of the nation's capital, Monrovia. Samuel Doe was a master sergeant in the Liberian Armed Forces who staged a coup d'etat in 1980 when he ousted President William Tolbert. Doe became the chairman of the People's Redemption Council, sounds all very Monty Python here, and subsequently became president in 1985. They go by the nickname of the Lone Star after the single star on the Liberian flag, which represents the fact that Liberia was the first independent republic in Africa. Liberia are ranked 42nd out of 54 nations in Africa. George Weah is the most notable Liberian player, who made 75 appearances for his country, scoring 22 goals. Most of the club football was with that he played was with Monaco with 103 appearances, PSG with 96 appearances, AC Milan was with 144 appearances. But he also spent a short amount of time on loan with both Chelsea and Man City in year 2000. The current Liberia squad boasts an England-based player in Mohamed Sangare, who spent his youth career and one senior season at Newcastle and signed for Accrington Stanley at the beginning of the season. The current manager of the Liberian national team is Peter Butler. Peter played as a midfielder, making more than 450 appearances in the English football leagues, most notably with West Ham and West Brom, but also amongst others, Cambridge, Huddersfield and Halifax. His position as Liberian manager is his 17th managerial appointment since the year 2000. There are currently no links between Liberia and the Albion, unless you can think of any. Thank you very much for that, Phil, from oldfootballshirts.com. And, of course, you can see that shirt and over 100,000 others, including many, many fine Albion shirts, which if you can go back through our YouTube channel, there's you'll find what Paul Cameron's favourite Albion shirt was as well.
Do you want to give us a quick reminder, a quick heads up as to what that was, Paul, off the top of your head?
Yeah, the all blue, 85, 86, 87, around then.
The Phoenix Brewery. Yeah. Absolute ripper.
The one that I saw someone wearing it actually at Old Trafford.
You guys haven't reproduced it, have you?
No, we can't. We're Nike now, aren't we? And that's obviously very much an Adidas shirt.
So is it the case that you can
I don't
only
know.
do...
You should see my garniture. It's an Adidas template with a Nike swoosh on it. It's not moody at all.
No. So is it the case that you can do old shirts from with that have companies sponsor companies that no longer exist, and maybe football, you know, shirt makers that no longer exist?
I think the club own the IP. Didn't Kieran do a Price of Football podcast about this? So yeah, the club would own the IP, but I guess that is so Adidas. You know, it's the three stripes, isn't it, that make that shirt? So
yeah.
Yeah. Although I do actually quite like our current home shirt. I didn't
it's
see
a
it finished. So
it's a grower.
And do you know what the kit man said to me on the night we launched it down on the beach, which was great fun, by the way, doing all that with Norman. He said it'll grow on people. They will eventually grow to like it.
Okay.
So, and I think I think that's already started.
Paul, I have to ask you the question. What did you make of the leak?
It's just not really helpful when that stuff happens. It's not ideal. A lot of money goes into it, went into, you know, a proper launch for it. A lot of planning went into it. I know the fans were getting impatient, but we sort of planned with Norman, his management, how we were going to do it. I think the launch was actually really good fun and epic. That doesn't help when people, I know they want to be first with this stuff. It doesn't help. Doesn't help when people leak transfers, you know, particularly now, given our reputation in terms of our recruitment. You know, someone leaks a transfer a week out and you're alerting all those other clubs that perhaps haven't got quite as good recruitment. Oh, Brighton are interested in this player. Let's try and give them if it's genuine. So it doesn't help us. But
interesting point that Andy Naylor made last week about that sort of thing. He said was he said when he reads someone saying that Albion or whoever it might be are interested in a player, he said, how on earth am I supposed to write that up? What on earth is interested in actually mean? He said it's such a non-phrase that it kind of helps, I think, the proper journalist, because it's you know full well it's a BS one that's been made up by the needy little kids who want to be first.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much stuff out there that's just not true. You know, as we saw with the Cucurella thing, people reporting it was a done deal good 24 hours before it actually was, and the price it was being reported at was a long way south from the price the deal actually got done at. So, you know, thanks to all those people that put that stuff out there, they were wrong, and they helped us get a lot more money for the player. So, you know, that's people are just desperate to be first, and everybody's a journalist, everybody's a ITK or whatever they call it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it did make me laugh, some of the stuff I was reading over the summer about I'm going to give everybody that likes this tweet, if this player signs, if I'm not right, I'll give everybody that likes this tweet £5, and then the Twitter account vanishes when it doesn't happen. you know, there's
funny that. But back in the
tons
real
of
world,
nonsense out there.
Back in the real world now, after the semi-final of the Women's Euros, Alex Scott, I think probably kind of, you know, with a certain amount of emotion and certainly a lump in her throat, made a kind of a little bit of a treatise about when it was going to be established that England was going to host the Women's Euros
after the final,
and
people, I think,
and not many clubs put their hands up and said, yeah, we'll host it. And, you know, bearing in mind that the club had already hosted at least a couple of England women internationals, plus it's got the Albion women's team that it's investing so heavily into, then I think it would have been a sort of a fairly obvious, straightforward thing, certainly from fans' perspective, to say, yeah, let's have it here. So, you know, all right, given that we had to wait a year, what was the Euros like for Brighton and Hove Albion?
You guys were there. I could see you from where I was sat at the quarter final. I missed unfortunately, I missed the 8-0 Norway game. I had tickets for it. I bought my tickets a year ago.
Yeah.
And I bought tickets for the game down at Southampton that England played, the game at the Amex. I didn't bother with the away Austria game, I wasn't too fussed about that. I thought if I'm going to go, I'll go and just go in there.
12,000 went though.
Help out on the media side. Yeah, but we were away. So that was a week we ended up being in Estoril with the first team. So plenty of willing takers who wanted the tickets, and very easy to pass them through the UEFA app.
Oh, yes.
And then I had tickets for the court final, which I also passed on to a colleague here and bought some more tickets and went to the game and took our good friend Dan Tester and his stepdaughter, yep, and another friend. So we four of us managed to get some late returns, and we sat in the Heineken lounge seats, which were up by the where Alex Scott and Ian Wright were doing all the TV stuff. So that was quite good fun. Really, really great game. Really enjoyed it. And then I had tickets for the final as well. So I bought two tickets for the final, which was, I've got to say, having been at both Euros finals, you know, don't get me wrong, I really enjoyed the men's Euros. It was tremendous fun. And I didn't, it was strange really, because you kind of before that, you would have thought I would have been so disappointed that we'd lost. But having been and followed England all over the world and, you know, seen them lose in Moscow in the semi-final, seeing them lose in Germany, you know, Portugal in 2004 in the Euros, and, you know, get to the latter stages of competitions and not get through to the finals, it actually wasn't as disappointing as I thought, because it was kind of like we've ridden the ride all the way to the end, even though we haven't won, but for one penalty kick, you know, there'd be engraving our name on the trophy. So I love the men's Euros, but the women's Euros, it proved that there are these thousands of people out there that want to come and watch football and want to support their, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's men or women. It was a brilliant day out. Group of us went up. Luckily, all our seats were together. Various people from the club, just purely by luck, we were all sort of in the same block. we'd all sort of bought our tickets a year ago. But yeah, it was great fun, and obviously for the girls to win it, you know, and a lot of people who have, you know, over the years have invested and supported the Lionesses on that journey, and often with very little back the other way, you know, that must have been such an amazing feeling. You know, we saw it with the pundits and the players, but yeah, it was just top day, and
I think my question was more about what was it like for Brighton Hove Albion, I suppose, the entity rather than, well, I suppose the individuals. And it's great that you've just
the knock-on effect.
Don't get me wrong, it was hard work, and a lot of people, you know, a lot of people gave up extra time and put the extra yards in to so we could host it. But you know, we saw from the Rugby World Cup in 2015 how brilliant it was for the city. Mm. You know, we see from every Premier League game how brilliant it is for the city. So, to you know, put me on the European map as a host venue, absolute no-brainer. You've got to. I hope that hopefully we will continue to host the Lionesses now and again. Unfortunately for us, but fortunately for them, you know, they're now selling out Wembley for games. But I'm sure there will be games that we can potentially down the line. And that, you know, I'm sure they loved playing here. I think they enjoyed those two games at the Amex. They enjoyed the love they got from the crowd, the support they got from the crowd. And we're seeing a knock-on effect with the WSL. You know, we've done over 1,500 season tickets for the season. The game at the Amex, we've sold over 2,000 tickets for that game.
Already?
You know, almost a month out. Yeah. So get on it, people. It's going to, you know, we're getting to the point where we're looking at P&Ls and what the sweet spot is for you know, the women's team playing at the Amex more regularly. And potentially, ideally, you know, the ultimate goal is they fill the Amex like the men's team do and play there all the time. So now, if you'd said that to me five years ago, I'd have said, yeah, okay, that's going to take a long time. It's in touching distance now. It's up to the fans. I read a piece by, I think it was on We Are Brighton, that said, you know, it's actually up to us now. We need to get down to these games. And they're 100% right. You know, the stadium's there, fill it, get behind them, come to the Leicester game, come to the Villa game, show the club that the support is there, fill the stadium, and then you know, potentially the women are playing there every week. We are looking at various different options, whether it's we don't really want to play at Crawley. As brilliant hosts Crawley have been, and they have been really good hosts, and they're great to work with. You know, the stadium's red. It's 45 minutes up the road for a lot of people. We don't really want to be playing there. We'd rather have the girls back in Brighton, playing in Brighton, playing in front of a decent-sized crowd. Now, how we do that, we've got to look at, and that might be a smaller stadium, similar to what Manchester City have got in the shadow of the Etihad, or it may be that we're playing at the Amex. So it's down to people, you know, turn up and get behind the team, and all of a sudden, you know, we can start contemplating the genuine possibility of filling the Amex.
Well, there's your kind of spiral argument, isn't it? The more people you get to the Amex to watch the game, the more likely that you are going to want to host the game at the Amex, which means that more people are going to come to the Amex, which means more people will want
What we don't want to do, though, is put games on and 3,000 turn up, because we lose money on that. You know, yeah. It costs us more to open the stadium and put a game on. So when we put these games on, it is about growing the interest in the women's game. Don't get me wrong. But we can't do it every week, because that money could be better invested into things like the money we spent on the training facility here at the training ground, or, you know, academies or coaching or what have you. And that's better for the long-term growth for the game than losing money putting a fixture on it at the Amex. But at the same time, we've still got to grow that interest and grow that crowd. So it's just about, you know, getting that sweet spot and getting that decision right. But potential is there. We've seen it with the Euros. We're seeing it already in the numbers that we're seeing on the ticket sales, but we need to do more. You know, it's about getting, and it's not just young girls, by the way, that final, a lot of young boys as well, a lot of families, because it's affordable and they can, you know, can't always afford to go to a Men's England international. It's more expensive. Yeah. Can't always afford to go to a Premier League game, you know, but at the same time, it's still not cheap to go to a women's game, but it gives you that affordable football, you know. But if you think it's crazy, really. We'd probably outsell it. If I said to you, our women's team would be outselling a lot of League One clubs in terms.
Yeah, that's
a point, actually.
I would have thought at the Goldstone, not a lot of people had season tickets at the Goldstone, and yet there were seasons where we'd get 20,000 regularly through the gate. I don't know what the season ticket numbers were at the Goldstone, but you might even be looking at having more season ticket holders now for the women's team. Certainly for that last year at the Goldstone.
More season ticket for 97, But no, the point I was going to make was that, and this is where a legacy is actually starting, and I mean, it's about gaining momentum, is that obviously, and I've said this on the show already, is that, you know, being sort of, you know, so closely associated with the Robert Eaton Memorial Fund, is that we've got new girls football clubs being now sprung up, certainly across Sussex, but they're being, you know, there's new juniors
100%
and they're asking us for help, and we're more than happy to help, but my point is that we're witnessing this.
Absolutely. I was chatting to someone the other day who was saying to me, you know, you want to see the talent that is coming through now, because you're getting more girls playing football. You know, I can remember having a conversation with Hope Powell 3 or 4 years ago, and we talked about the league, and Hope's big worry was there wasn't enough quality to even backfill the teams that are in the WSL now. I don't think that's going to be a problem 5-10 years down the line. I think you're going to, the product and the game is just going to get better and better and better. So, you know, and that's kind of what Alex Scott was saying. And go back to your original point, you know, I think we were always in from the start. You know, I go back to it with him when Martin Perry was pushing and banging the drum. And I'll be honest, I was a bit of a skeptic then, and it didn't really float my boat. Where it really kicked on was when we had that quite successful team that eventually got promoted, and you're actually going to games and thinking, this is watchable, this is marketable. Yeah. And now you're getting better and better and better. And it's amazing to me the speed at which the women's game has grown and evolved. It's fantastic, because, and you know, let's not forget 5-6 years ago, half of these girls were playing football and holding down full-time jobs. You know, that's really impressive. And that was a real sacrifice. And, you know, that's when you see those girls getting so emotional on the pitch. That's why, because the thing that I can remember we talked about, we got went back to the pub after the game and we were talking about it, and one of the things we said was those girls never could even dream of what that would be like. We could, as boys, playing football when we were kids. We could dream of winning the FA Cup and playing at Wembley in front of 100,000, as ludicrous as it would seem for anybody that's ever seen me play football, but we could still dream of that. Those girls didn't even have it as a, that you know, as a, blocked as a off dream. For them. Well, there was nobody there doing it. And then all of a sudden, bang, they're doing it. You watch, women's football is going to explode. Oh, my God, girls and boys are seeing, you know, Leah Williams lift the trophy.
Yeah.
That is going to explode. Boom.
Yeah, and Paul, and it also really helps when you have someone like, say, Alessio Russo scoring an absolutely stunning back heel goal, which is, ow, it was a work of art. And speaking of art, we had a competition.
Well done. Well done. That was, I didn't hear the gears crunching at all there, mate. No, we've teamed up with Art of Football, who aren't giving away a specific T-shirt. They're giving away a £30 voucher for one of their T-shirts or pieces of artwork, none of which are part of the Albion's copyright. They go their own way. So you can hang up from your lawyers now, Paul. So all they asked to do was just to follow them on Twitter and follow us at the same time. And the number of people that have done so, we did the draw just before we came on air. And congratulations to Albion fan Tony Cooney, who has won £30 worth of Art of Football gift vouchers. Tony, will be in touch and they'll be winging their way to you hopefully before the end of the week. Congratulations, mate.
And a couple of their shirts we've been helped design as well.
The other night, didn't you? The one with the
Harveys
the one with the pint of Harveys.
The shirts one we did as well. So yeah, no, all good.
Absolutely.
All good. Okay, we've just got enough time to quickly just have a look ahead to the weekend and next week, starting with West Ham, who had a brilliant start to the season, losing both games, and they'll be itching to try and break their Albion hoodoo at the weekend, Al.
Well, let's hope it just carries on. I mean, it's I think to some of their fans, we are still hashtag teams like Brighton. So, you know, I'm more than happy for that to carry on. Is it going to cool off, by the way, this weekend? It's about time it did, so that we can actually play at, you know, at a decent tempo. I mean, that was astonishing, that the heat under which, you know, the players played at Old Trafford and at the Amex. But yeah, so it's, I don't know, but West Ham are no mugs. They've had a couple of brilliant seasons. They're not going to turn rubbish overnight. It's not going to be easy, as they say. I'm going down the old management football cliches sort of road here, but having said that, the confidence with which Graham Potter's got his team playing, and assuming everyone can stay fit, to be honest, there's only Manchester City I ever fear. And even this season, I feel Chelsea are there for the taking, even with their improved squad. You know, Graham Potter is that good that he can take on any manager in the country, look him square in the eye and say, right, let's have a game. Because, you know, I mean, it's not going to happen perfectly first time every time, you know, this season. You can't have it. Even the best teams in the world have an off day. But, you know, there's no reason why we can't go to West Ham and put in a really good game, and we'll have a nice bit of fun in London on Sunday.
Well, we left it late up there last time. There's a possibility that player might not be in the squad, but we'll come to that.
Well, he's still around, isn't he? So who knows?
I mean, at the moment,
never say never.
And there's talk that there may possibly be another Ecuadorian, so I can wear my Ecuador shirt again.
That has been alluded to already in this show, AD. So
I believe
Can I just point out to our listener that we're recording this on the Tuesday evening? So as with all of these things that happen with the Albion, that time does tend to overtake us. So,
but Paul, the one that most people are looking forward to this week isn't a trip to the Olympic Stadium or to the London Stadium, as it's called. It is a trip to somewhere in the middle of Gloucestershire. Is that one you're looking forward to, Paul?
I've actually been there to watch the Albion. We played them in the Papa John's.
That was at home.
I didn't see the Albion. No. You're thinking of many moons ago. We played the under-21s. Played them a couple of, or were supposed to play them the night after the Crystal Palace game last season.
which Neil Mopay scored the last minute equaliser. Don't let it bounce, that one.
Yeah.
24 hours later, we were supposed to play at Forest Green. Got to the game, torrential downpour, a bit like today, match postponed. And then when it was reorganised, I can't remember why, but there was something, some reason why I couldn't make the game. So I actually went there, but I've never seen the Albion play there.
I'm
with you.
So it will be the first time that I officially can tick it off.
The thing I find, I think what the thing that we're finding intriguing about it is, you know, here's Brighton and Hove Albion, a progressive club in a progressive city. And then you've got Forest Green Rovers, who I love that their address is another way. And they've kind of looked the football culture in the eye and said, well, we're going to do something else here. And the whole notion of sustainability and veganism and, you know, kind of, you know, new age stuff is a little bit sort of a gear crunch. And if anyone was ever going to do that, you'd have thought within this country, given the green credentials with a large and small G across Brighton and Hove, that it would actually be, you know, the Albion that do it. And it's Forest Green Rovers who play in the smallest town that a football league club is hosted in. And I think there's a kind of a curiosity about it to say, well, you know, maybe even along the lines of, well, you know, is there something that the Albion fans can take away from this? Who knows? But, you know,
it is something we're working quite hard on. We've got a little subcommittee at the club on the sustainability side. People will have seen the paper cups for the beers at the weekend.
Yeah, that
trying
was good.
To get rid of plastic. Well, actually, it wasn't good. It didn't work because it just, as soon as the beer hit it, it froths up and it made it so difficult for the staff in the kiosk. So I wouldn't say it was a complete disaster. However, at a meeting, we found an interesting cup supplier who provides a plastic cup, which not only is recyclable, but it's biodegradable. So ideally, we would encourage fans to recycle that, hoping to have that in for the Leeds game. But if somebody does decide they're just going to lob it in a bush, it will disintegrate and obviously it's safe for the environment. So
yeah,
we are working on a lot of these things. Zero waste to landfill from the stadium. All of your trash gets sorted, recycled. So, you know, that's a pretty big thing for us.
Yeah. We also saw the water stations, Paul, didn't we, as well?
Water stations were superb, by the way.
Yeah, the sustainable transport getting to and from the stadium. So it is something we want to do. We are trying to do. I think there's recently been a film featuring Bruno. Manager's very keen on it as well. Graham's very keen to sort of cut out single-use plastics. Even looking at ways we travel to games. We obviously fly at the moment, which isn't ideal, obviously, but you have to balance the needs of the athlete with the with that side of things. But it is something we are actively looking at and trying to obviously play our part and do our bit. So I don't think anyone can ignore it. And that includes us as a Premier League football club. So it is something that is on the agenda quite regularly. We are talking about quite regularly. And I think it's important that we play our part.
Thank you to Alan Wares. Thank you to Paul Camlin. This has been the Albion Roar on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com on DAB, and of course on our podcast and in association with oldfootballshirts.com. We'll see you all again next week. Bye.
In the town where I was born, lived a man who sailed to sea, and he told us of his life. In the land of submarines, so we sailed unto the sun till we found the sea of green, and we lived beneath the waves in our yellow submarine.
We all live in a yellow submarine, yellow submarine, yellow submarine.
every one of us.